I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Two Cups of Tea. I'm Chris Heath and today I'm in Stotford, just down the road from Biggleswade. And with the help of a large pot of tea and some biscuits, I'm about to hear the life story of another old legend in his golden years. Here's a few tidbits to reel you in.
I grew wings and in my mind, I went up into the air like Superman.
Oh my God.
We used to put our skates on. We used to get behind the car and hang on to the bumper. I played hooky for 60 days straight. Put you in a room, and in that room you see a snake. They turn the light out in that room, and they take the snake out. And the kids, they liked it so much that they used to call me Mr. Munchkin.
Now, as you'll have just heard, I had a slight issue with the microphone, so it's not the crispest recording you've ever heard in your life. But Felix Cosme's story is so fascinating that I figured we'd just grin and bear it this time. Here comes the theme tune.
I was born in the hospital in San Juan, Puerto Rico.
What year was that?
1934.
Well, I must say you're looking good on that if it's 1934. My God.
I'm 83.
83.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll stop flirting. So whereabouts in San Juan? So it was in a hospital in San Juan.
Yeah, and I grew up for the first 5 years of my life in a place called Puente Tierra.
What does that mean?
Puente means, Puente means door.
Yeah.
Tierra means dirt.
The dirt door?
That's what it says. That's the way I understood it.
Yeah.
Puente Tierra.
Yeah. What are your memories of those first few years?
Yeah. Well, my father died when I was 9 months old. He died when he was in the Navy, and he came out of the Navy, and he was a plumber.
Yeah.
And he married my mother when she was 21, and he was 41. Then he passed away 9 months later.
Could you remember how?
He had a heart attack.
Oh, wow.
He passed away. And we stayed in Puerto Rico, my mother, myself, and my grandmother, until I was five. And she decided that she wanted to go to New York and live with her sister.
That's a big move.
So she came and lived with her sister in New York, 114th Street.
Mm.
And it was a bit of a shock. Coming to New York in the wintertime.
Oh, is that when you moved, the winter?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, from Puerto Rico to New York in winter.
And the thing about it was she had passage. She was going to get passage on a ship. I think the name of the ship was called El Borinque.
Mm.
And Borinque is, I can't remember all that well.
Mm.
It got torpedoed during the war. So we was lucky. I started out a lucky life.
Yeah.
And we came to New York, lived with my mother's sister, and then she got a job.
Mm.
And I went to school within about a block away, which was lucky. And she saved enough money to get an apartment of her own. about on 114th Street between Madison Avenue and Park Avenue, too far from where she, my sister lived.
See, when I hear Madison Avenue and Park Avenue, that sounds like the well-to-do area of New York.
That's further downtown.
Yeah.
This was uptown. This was in what they call Spanish Harlem.
Spanish Harlem?
Yeah.
Now I know Spanish Harlem because of the song.
Yeah.
So what was it like?
It was...
For you, when
for
you
me,
first arrived.
It was, my hands were frozen.
Of course, because of the winter,
For the snow, and I played with the kids there. And I went in crying with my hands were frozen, and my mother straight away, the natural thing is to put your hands in hot water because it would throw it out. And my sister said, no, you put it in cold water, because it would be less painful.
Yeah.
And then I went to school, and then... which wasn't too far. I used to hate going into school because I had always been with my mother at the time. And my mother would keep me in company. She used to she liked movie stars.
Yeah.
And she was a young lady. And she used to cut out movie stars and stuff and put them in an album. So I used to do the same thing with little dolls. I used to cut them up and paste them on cardboard.
Yeah.
I used to put dresses and stuff and trousers on them.
Oh, like the little cutout ones?
Yes.
Where, it's like the
back of them has a little piece that you just...
The fold-over tabs.
Fold over,
yeah, I've seen those. Like
and then I used to play in the garden in Puerto Rico, and I used to take my belt.
Yeah.
And I used to fold the belt in half, and I used to swing it around. And the belt would go, and my mother said, don't do that.
Yeah.
Because you're calling the devil. So I stopped doing it.
Wow, really?
I think she was afraid that I would the belt would hit my face or my eyes.
Yes, right. Okay, kid, that makes more sense.
So I stopped doing that.
Yeah, that's it. So it's less superstition and more just wanting, make sure you don't put an eye out.
Yeah.
So what was the neighborhood like that you moved into, Spanish Harlem?
It was a tough neighborhood, but it wasn't as tough as other neighborhoods.
Mm.
It was a lot of smoking of marijuana.
Yeah,
drinking of wine, which I never smoked marijuana.
Mm.
I got a taste of it once when I was about 13, 14, where I started smoking on a QT. Well, that's what my mother would see.
Yeah.
And this guy wanted a cigarette, so I gave him a cigarette, and I said, whatever you do, there's a thing it's called a roach.
Yes.
It's the end of the marijuana, you put it into a cigarette.
Yeah.
And you can then finish the whole marijuana.
Yeah.
Right? And I said, make sure all the smoke is out. So I gave him the cigarette. And we play stickball.
Yeah.
Right on the street, and I played center field, which is out in the avenue, more or less.
Yeah. So when you say center field, this is you're playing in the street in Madison Avenue.
Madison Avenue. Yeah.
So while the cars were going back and forth.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. When someone hit the ball and they hit a fly ball, and I would look left, look right, safe, and then I would go into the center of Madison Avenue and catch the ball. If it was a grounder and it came too fast for the infield to grab it, it would come out. I look left, look right, and then I would stand in the way and I can't grab it. When this chap smoked the cigarette and he put the roach in the cigarette, then he finished it and he wanted to give me a puff from the cigarette.
Yeah,
I took a puff from the cigarette, but the smoke from the marijuana was in it and it affected me a bit. So when they hit the ball, you won't believe this. I grew wings, and in my mind, I went up into the air like Superman.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's the only time that stuff ever entered my system.
Yeah.
We had a building, the sewer was home plate. Then about 12 maybe 15 feet going towards Madison Avenue.
Yeah.
On the side, about 15 feet from home base was first base.
Yeah.
And then on the corner of Madison Avenue, right?
Yeah.
Well, on the corner of 114th Street, which is another sewer, that would be second base. And then you come back down across from first base is third base. And then you go from third base back to the sewer where home base is, right? And on the left, on the corner, was the entrance to the fire station. So no cars would be able to park in front of the entrance of the fire station or across from the fire station. So we always had free, like it was the field, but it's out in the street.
So that's why you picked there.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And across the street in Madison Avenue, there was a five-story tall building.
It yeah.
seemed higher than five stories. If you hit the ball and it went into that roof, that was an automatic home run.
So that's the sweet spot you always aim for.
Everybody wanted to hit the ball there.
And did you ever get one?
When I was 16, I hit the ball there. Yeah, it was.
I can see the look in your eyes. You're still pleased with that now.
It was a delight. It was. Yeah. And coming down in Park Avenue from 112th Street all the way down to 110th Street, if I'm not mistaken, on Park Avenue, there is looks like a train, and what that is. It's a building made like a train, and it's the market.
Oh, okay.
There's stalls in there where they sell vegetables, they sell clothing.
So it looks like train compartments.
That's it.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
So all the way down. In fact, I used to work at a bakery there after school and during the summer.
So going back to stickball quickly. Yeah. So you were how old when you started? So did you play that? Was that one of the things you did when you were a bit older?
You started playing it when you were about, I guess, when I was about 13, 14.
Sure,
maybe 10. Yeah.
So that must have been into the 40s then. So that must have been during the war you were playing stickball.
Yes, yeah. And we used to have one guy, he was so good that he tried out for the New York Yankees.
Wow.
But he wasn't good enough. No.
But he was still amazing. But
he was
not
outstanding, this guy.
That shows you how
he was one of the big guys.
Yeah.
That's what we call him. One of the big guys is between 19 and 25 years old.
So it was a huge range of everyone in the neighborhood used to play stickball.
Yeah, and you would
play. So they were quite big games.
Yeah. You would play 114th Street.
Yeah.
We was called the home. I think we was called the home league.
Yeah.
Because in those days, if welfare, that's home relief. And we called our team the home relief.
Oh, because you guys are on the welfare,
yes,
so yeah.
Not I, but
yeah.
Other people. My mother never believed in having other people support her. So she worked part time and also brought piecework. You bring the work home.
Yeah.
And you work in the kitchen, all the family we worked in doing scarves, more or less.
I've got such a great image of you guys all playing out stickball on the streets. It's like the stuff I've seen in the movies, you know, but everyone playing out on the street in the 40s in New York. In the summer, I've got to ask this because I know there'll be people who are the same age as me who wonder if it's just something from the movies or if it's true. Did you switch on the fire hydrants so they were out on the street? How did you do that?
You take like a piece of wood. Could be about, say, 18 inches or maybe 12 to 18 inches.
So there was a special way of, so you weren't supposed to turn them on?
No, no. And you have a thick wire. And somehow with a hammer or heavy stick, put the wire where the bolt, the nut is, on the top of the hydrant.
Yeah.
And turn it. That would allow the water to come out. And then you turn it. The more you turn it, the more the pressure comes out. And then to make it look like a shower, come up high, you put a case, like where the milk bottles come in, they deliver the milk bottles, have one of those, put it over the opening of the where the water comes out of, and that makes it into like a nozzle.
And so you did that in the summer to cool down and just used to...
Yes, yeah. And the police would come and turn it off.
Oh, would they?
Yeah.
What, like the beat cops?
Yes, yeah. We always used to have a police officer come by.
Yeah.
And as soon as the police officer came by, we used to, when we were playing ball, we used to hide the stick. The bat was a broom handle.
Yeah.
With all the straw taken out. And he used to come down with twirling his baton and everything.
And so they really did that too, all the truncheon twirling. Yeah, yeah. That's amazing.
It wasn't just in the movies.
That's the thing. I mean, I suppose it had to come from somewhere, but because that's where I've always seen it, there's a part of you thinks, was it real or is that just an invention?
And the movie, West Side Story, that took place on 111th Street.
Yeah.
And the guys that were, can't hardly remember, it was long, long ago I saw the movie. That was a team there on 111th Street. These were big guys. And this one guy that tried out for the New York Yankees, he come from that neighborhood.
Oh,
but
really?
He played ball in our street because we don't call ourselves the little guys, but I could say it now. We were the little guys, and you had 19 to 25-year-olds. They had their own team, and he used to play with them as well.
So when you were a kid, were you like, were you tough?
I was very slender.
Yeah.
Very slender, very slim. And I was exercising all the time. I used to love to swim.
Mm. Where did you swim?
We used to go swimming, I think it was 155th Street, swimming baths called High Bridge. And we used to either hitch on the bus, get on top of the bus, on the back of the bus, or a lorry, and get there. Or we used to put our skates on and do the same thing, but just hang on to the bus. Or...
So you used to tow? You used to get towed by... Did they know you were on the back of the...
So I'm sure they've probably seen it. You know? And... We used to get, sometimes we felt brave and it wasn't really a lot of traffic on Madison Avenue. We used to get behind a car and hang on to the bumper of the car, crouch down, right, and go as far as we could on that particular vehicle, and then just reach over and hang on to the other one.
And switch cars in mid.
We used to bet who can get to 125th Street the fastest.
Wow.
And I used to say, I hope my mother's friends or my mother doesn't see me.
Can you imagine
if you... stupid.
Yeah.
I can say that now.
Yeah, that was stupid.
Yeah, I can say that now. It was really something. That's how we do it.
Yeah.
That's the only bad things I used to do.
Well, that's, you know what? That's not too bad.
And they used to have containers of peanut. You put a nickel, 5 cents, the peanuts would come out.
Oh, I know. I know what you're saying, yeah.
And you get almost a handful. And
yeah.
When you go to the movies, you can buy some.
Yeah, there's like a little row of the dispensers. Yeah. You put the, you turn the dial and then you got to hold out your hands and whatever.
The way to cheat that is you take one of your mother's bobby pins.
Yeah.
And you straighten it out, take the end of it, the size of a nickel.
Yeah.
I think it was a 5 cents piece. And then just stick it into the slot.
Yeah.
And then just turn the handle. And I used to get pockets full. We used to get so many of them that when we was in the theater, we used to throw it up in the air and it would hit people in the head.
Did your mom ever find out that you were stealing all her bobby pins?
No.
What were you like at school? Did you enjoy school?
I hated school, especially math.
Mm.
I went to a school by the name of James Fenimore Cooper.
Oh, right, yeah.
And the school was five to six blocks away from us on Madison Avenue. And their saying of the school, they had a sign in the entrance that said, "The truth will set you free." James Fenimore Cooper was the name. 100 was PS 120, James Fenimore Cooper.
That's the last time a Mohican's guy, isn't it? James
Yes, Fenimore. And I used to walk there because I couldn't carry my books and hitch a ride at the same time. So I hated algebra when I was much older. Trigonometry, I just didn't like it at all.
So
I played hooky, which is, I just didn't go to school.
Yeah.
For 60 days straight.
Oh, my God.
And I got away with it up to a point that I used to, when I went into school, I used to forge my mother's handwriting.
Yeah.
I should have taken that up as a profession. Because I got away with it up to a point.
I can imagine you in like a kiosk full of like bobby pins and the wire to turn on fire hydrants and counterfeit. And you could have just set up a little business there. Just ways to cheat everything.
And I got caught. We got caught one day because I used to go with three of my friends.
Oh, is that what you did when you were playing? What did you do? Yeah, so what did you do when you weren't at school then?
Well, we'd go to a park, Central Park. It starts at 100 and goes all the way down to 99th Street. And we'd play football, American football. We picked up a guy who was also away from school. And this guy was much more, he knew more of the world than we did. He was much older. And a little boy was walking, about 10 years old, walking in the park. And this guy decided he wanted to hold him up. And he says to him, empty out your pockets. And I said, leave the guy alone, man. He's not bothering anybody.
So this is one of the guys you're with?
Yes.
Yeah.
And he emptied his pockets and a jackknife, pocket knife fell out. And the park attendant seen us. So he knew that we should have been in school, and he called the police. And all this little boy had, like maybe, pennies. And the police came, and everybody ran. And I ran as well. And I still have that reputation that I was the slowest runner in the world. Everybody ran faster than me.
Uh-oh.
Even a baby would crawl faster.
Oh, no, that, yeah.
And police come with the car.
Yeah.
And caught me. He says, what's your name, boy? He just slapped me in the face. And I told him straight away, Felix Cosme, 173 East 114th Street. And he took some notes, took me to a nearby school, and I confessed everything that I was in the school, blah, 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 and everything. And he read the riot act to me, turned me loose, and I walked home shaking.
Mm.
2 weeks later, this detective knocked on the door on a Saturday. And my mother's childhood friend always came on Saturday with her husband and two boys.
So it was a full house?
Yes.
And were you home too?
Yes. I was cooking, and the cop opened the door. Cheeto opened the door. That's my mother's childhood friend's husband.
Cheeto?
Yeah. His name was John Chevalier, but everyone called him Cheeto. And Felix Cosme lived here. They said yes, and he said,
oh, God.
He saw him come in, and he told my mother, your son hasn't been in school for 60 days. She was shocked that how did I get away? Why didn't the teacher notify her that I hadn't been going to school?
Mm.
Cheeto, he told my mother that what I need is, or what she needs is to have a man in house, a man in house. If you can't do that, then send him to Brooklyn to live with me and the boy. And he promised her that he was going to bring me up straight as a die. And when I was 16, I went to live in Brooklyn with them in a place called Red Hook.
Red Hook?
Red Hook, Brooklyn. It's
You were 16, so that was 1950.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was a place where they didn't own their own home. They lived in an apartment in high rise.
Yeah.
They call them the projects. And there was a neighborhood with not a lot of Puerto Ricans, very few Puerto Ricans there or Black Americans.
Yeah.
It was mainly Irish and Italians.
Wow. Okay.
And they were tougher than the area I came from.
Yeah.
Because we played football on the street, and instead of tackling, we used touch football.
They
touch you in the back.
And then that's a tackle and you let the ball go,
And they, in Red Hook, they played the same thing, except they did it with two-hand tag.
Right.
And when they tackle you with two-hand tag, they want to, on your back, they not try to knock your heart out from the socket. That's the way it was. I stayed there in their house for, I think, two semesters, about 9 months, almost a year.
And did it work?
It did work. Most of my family members were either detectives or friends were detectives and merchant seamen.
Mm.
I want to be one or the other.
Yeah.
And when I told my mother that that I wanted to be a police officer, she almost had a heart attack.
Oh, really? So that was a no.
So I joined the Navy.
Well, was that better or worse? What did she think of that?
Oh, she didn't mind that.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, she didn't mind it. She wasn't too pleased with the merchant seamen that used to come to our house.
Yeah.
Because they used to say things that I don't dare tell you now by the microphone what they used to say. How to remove pimples from your face.
So they had, what was it, let's just say colorful language.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I joined the Navy when I was 18.
So how long were you with the Navy for?
I was in the Navy for 20 years.
Wow.
I just did what I had to do.
Yeah. So what year was this? You were 18, early 50s.
I joined 1953.
Yeah.
And I retired in 1972. And the whole, my whole career, I was on six different ships and 1 year in Chulai, Vietnam.
I was going to say, 1972, you must have seen action in Vietnam. Yeah.
It was 125 of us going to counterinsurgency training. So we went to counterinsurgency training for 2 weeks, and we went through all sorts of training. Like they give you a message to give to, you go from point A to point B with this message. And you're supposed to give it to the person in charge at point B. And you never get to point B. You get captured.
Right. Okay.
Supposedly by the enemy.
Yeah.
And then they do all sorts of things to you. They put you in a locker.
It's almost like preparing you for torture.
Yeah, in a 6-foot locker. And you don't know about it, but it has holes in it.
Right.
And they put a hose, a fire hose, right?
Yeah.
To fill you with water.
Oh, my God.
But there's holes in the locker. And they ask you questions about your message that you have. This is what they did to us.
Oh, my God.
I don't know what they were supposed to do, but that's what they did. And they put, it never reaches. Never reaches your head, but you don't know.
Yeah, but you don't know that. You don't know it's not going to reach your head.
You just know it's covering. And it also put you in a room.
Yeah.
And in that room, you see a snake.
At that point, when I would lose it.
And then they turn the light out in that room, and they take the snake out. And they put a hose pipe, which is, say, a 5-inch hose.
Yeah.
And they tie your hands up, they close the door, and it's pitch black in there. And this line or this rope is going over your legs.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, it's terrifying.
Anyway, very few of us made it.
Yeah.
I was one that made it. And I spent a month in Da Nang and 11 months in Chula.
Wow.
And out of those 11 months, I spent 5 days in Singapore on what they call R&R.
Yeah. Well, that was good.
R&R.
Yeah.
It's called, but we called it
leg and
liquor. L&L.
Well, do you know what? It sounds like you deserved it.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When I left Vietnam, I got ordered to England.
Yeah.
If you want the best, you go to England.
Is that something you've always been interested in?
Yes,
dogs?
Yes.
Yeah.
I've always, as a youngster, I always wanted a German Shepherd because of the ring-tin-tin sort of
thing. Yeah. Gotcha.
And he was walking down the street with the German Shepherd, and this one man who owned a store of sweets and dog biscuits and stuff like that. So he ran out and looked at it and said, oh, there's a looking dog out there. And then I said, oh, that was my dog. So we got friendly. I got friendly with him.
Yeah.
And he was a trainer.
Mm. And where's this? Where are we now?
This was in High Wycombe.
Yeah.
High Wycombe, England. I got very friendly with him. And then I joined, instead of doing obedience, I joined a club that trained you how to show dogs. And then I showed this German Shepherd bitch. And
when you say you showed her, you mean you, does that mean
I took her to dog shows?
You presented her at a dog
show.
You're the one that walks alongside.
Yes. I presented. I'd go on a Wednesday, I'd go to the training classes, and they showed me how to present the German Shepherd.
Yeah.
Or how to present a dog to the judge.
Is that a hard skill to learn, how to show a dog?
It's not that hard, but it doesn't come easy. You have to like to do it.
Yeah.
And you gotta have rhythm.
Right.
You gotta have some sort of rhythm, because it's between you and the dog is one.
Yeah.
More or less. Right? And you have to concentrate on each other.
Yeah.
Obedience is different.
So did you find success doing that as a showing dog?
At first I didn't. I'd get a third, or I'd get a second, or I'd get a fifth. But the more I did it, and the more I was with the professional handlers, British professional handlers, the more I learned. And then I entered my show in Hitchin, which is near High Wycombe.
Yeah. It is strange to hear you talking about the places, you know, San Juan and Spanish Harlem and Da Nang, Vietnam, and then High Wycombe. Just, it feels really strange.
I still haven't mentioned Yugoslavia.
Oh, my God.
Dubrovnik, Yugoslavia. Anyway, I entered this show in Hitchin, and you call up the secretary, any secretary, and the secretary sends you an entry form. You fill in the entry form and send it back to that secretary.
Yeah.
Well, with the money. It so happened I didn't know where Hitchin was.
Yeah.
So I called the secretary up, and it so happened that secretary was a lady by the name of Joyce Collis.
Yes.
Right? And Joyce Collis is my present wife.
Ah.
Yeah. And she was married. I was married, yeah. Right?
To other people.
To other people.
Yeah.
And I called her up, and she was like most of the typical British people that I spoke with in 1967, 68. They just loved the American.
Yeah.
And she was very friendly.
Yeah.
And the day that she told me how to get to the show, the day of the show, I came with my wife and my two girls.
Yeah.
And I had a young boy, and he was more interested in football. So he stayed with another friend of his and his mother playing, they went to football. Playing football. And she greeted, Joyce greeted me with my family, very friendly and everything. And on the day, I got a third.
Yeah,
and
you still got a rosette though for a third.
Yeah, you got a yellow rosette.
Yeah,
and that was the last I knew. I never contacted this lady again.
Yeah,
until many years later. And then I'd go to all the shows, and I got better and better and better, and I started handling dogs for other people,
right?
Friends and that.
Yeah.
And
as I'm showing their dogs.
Showing their dogs for.
Right.
And 3 years I did this for 3 years.
Yeah.
And then I went back to the States with my family.
Yeah.
And then I got a job selling cars. I was the only black salesman there.
Mm.
All of the others were either Irish or Italian.
Yeah.
I felt so energetic and so gung-ho
that
I wanted to sell my mother a car, and my mother didn't drive. Anyway, and what I did was, it was four salesmen. Well, I worked at a place called V Motors in Middletown, New York, the Ford dealership.
So you worked for the Ford dealership and amongst
three others.
Yeah.
There's four of us.
Yeah, and this is early 70s.
72.
Yeah.
And we had a manager, and he was from New Jersey. And we had the owner had a son, tall guy, and he was the general manager.
Mm.
His name was Mike.
It's always the way.
Mike Botti.
Yeah.
B-O-T-T-I.
Mm.
And this is the truth. I left in 1976 to come to England, and I received a letter last year from Mike Botti, 41 or 42 years later.
Wow.
And he in his letter, I can let you read that letter, I still have it. He thought that much of me, of my methods, selling cars, that he used my system to the new salesman after I left.
Wow.
I came into the dealership. It made me feel so proud.
Yeah.
And he used that system. And the system that I used was, if you wanted to buy a car, I would get her phone number first.
Yeah.
Her date of birth. And then his phone number. And on her date of birth, and say it was July, in July I would send her a birthday card.
Yeah.
Christmas, I sent her a Christmas card. Valentine's Day, I sent her a Valentine's Day card.
Yeah.
Every holiday during the year, I would send it to him and her.
Yeah.
They would constantly have Felix Cosby in front of them.
Yeah.
Not by face, but by name.
Yeah.
So, and my theory is this, or was this, if someone in their family, they had a car and it broke down, who would they send... Who would they send them to buy a car from?
Yeah.
V Motors and Felix Cosby.
Yeah.
And that's simple as that. And if you...
And it worked.
It did work. If you... I was selling at times 22 and 23 cars a month.
But cars. The other part, listen, Felix, the other part of the equation here is it's not just reminding them of who you are.
Yeah.
You have to be a good guy too. Yeah. And if you weren't a good guy, then they wouldn't have come back.
And if you had children, across the road from V-Motors was a place that they make donuts, Dunkin' Donuts.
Oh, yes.
And they called it Munchkins.
Yeah.
And You go in there, you say, they sell it by the dozen. I said, I have a dozen munchkins.
Yeah.
And it was cheap. And I would buy the munchkins.
Yeah.
And when you came in with your two children, I'd have the bag open and I'd lay it on the desk.
Yeah.
And the kids would be on the side eating the munchkins.
Yeah.
Right. And I'd be talking to you about the car.
Yeah.
You could go for a ride in the car and you'd meet me with the two kids or one child and you come back. Or you take the kid, you take the bag with you.
Yeah.
No problem. And the kids, they liked it so much that they used to call me Mr. Munchkins. I used to tell their parents, are we going to go see Mr. Munchkins? I wrote a book in 1990. It was Judge Croft. Junior, final.
You did Crafts.
Yeah, I judged three times.
Oh my God.
I judged the finals of the junior handling.
Is that, that must be for a dog, for a judge, yeah. That must be the pinnacle?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes, yeah. I would never excel to get there, but I judged seven.
Listen, I think once you're a judge at Crafts, you've hit the top of your game.
I judged the finals there. And then in 87, I got to judge the championship shows.
Mm.
So I judged Crofts of Bearded Collies.
Yeah.
I judged Crofts in Border Collies. So it was, and I got to be, I don't want to say famous, but I got to be well known in junior handling.
So, Felix, I think you've had one of the most full lives I've ever heard. Of all the people I've spoken to, it's crazy. You start in San Juan, you then go to Spanish Harlem. You then join the Navy, you go all over the world, Singapore, you serve in Vietnam, that thing with the snakes, it's going to terrify me tonight and I'll have nightmares, thanks. and then you become an expert dog judge, you bring out a book in it and you become a judge at Crafts. It's amazing.
I have been blessed, I have been blessed.
Yeah, I think so.
That was Felix Cosmi. What a lovely bloke. And I did make a mistake. It was actually two books that he's written on dog training for juniors and not just one. Bad Christian, On Your Rug, Dirty Boy. As you'll have just heard, this podcast is about sharing some fantastic life stories. But there are well over a million chronically lonely people in the UK who have no one to share their stories with, especially over Christmas and New Year. If you'd like to know more about ways to change this, then please go online and visit campaigntoendloneliness.org and find out how together we can try to make loneliness a thing of the past. Thanks again to Felix Cosmi, and also thanks to Acast for hosting the show. See you next time.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.